98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
All of our top stories, all of our top headlines, all of our top takes, all in one spot. The 4 o'clock reset every single day. 4 o'clock, you can count on it, from the Burns and Gambo show. And we start with Major League Baseball. For the first time since the 30s, our nation's capital is getting a World Series baseball team.
I never doubted these guys. I really didn't. I kept telling myself, hey, stay with them. Stick to the process. Stay positive. Teach. And as soon as everybody gets healthy, we'll make a run. We'll make a run. And this, you know, we'll get back in this thing. Didn't know how far we'd get back in it. But I really believe that these guys could turn this around right from the get-go, and they did. And
that's manager Dave Martinez after the Nationals sweep the St. Louis Cardinals in the NLCS with their 7-4 win last night.
Yeah, 82-40 since that 19-31 start. Starting pitching has been fantastic for them, and you know, so many former Diamondbacks on that team. You know that owner, Ted Lerner, is 94 years old? Doesn't look it. Doesn't look it. I mean, moving around out there and everything, he just doesn't look at all. We'll have Chip Hale, the bench coach of the Washington Nationals, on the show in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, looking forward to that as well. Of course, tonight was supposed to be game 4 of the American League Championship Series. Rained out, so they're pushing it back. Game 4 is going to be on Thursday. Game 5 is on Friday. Game 6 is on Saturday. Game 7 is on Sunday, if necessary. And that's why Al Leiter on Golic and Wingo this morning thinks that benefits the Astros.
I would think it would be Houston. I think you can now push Greinke back to going back to Houston. I would bring Verlander back on what would be Friday, game 5, so now there wouldn't be an off day. The reason why I say that is that you now will have four consecutive games. You can't take advantage of the off day. And which of these teams uses their bullpen more? And it's the Yankees.
Nope. I disagree with them.
Okay.
I disagree. Because I think if for the Yankees to win this, they're going to have to beat either Verlander or Cole. And now you get to face Verlander at Yankee Stadium instead of Verlander in Houston. Verlander will pitch Game 5 at Yankee Stadium. You have a much better chance of beating Verlander at Yankee Stadium than you do in Houston. So if they went back to Houston, even up 3-2, they're probably going to lose the series because you've got to beat Verlander, and you've got to either beat Verlander or Cole. Now, if you beat Greinke and then you beat Verlander, you're going to face somebody else in Game 7 not named Verlander or Cole. I think the advantage goes to the Yankees because of that.
Some around baseball have pointed to the fact that Yankees relievers have not pitched in 3 consecutive games all season long. None of them have. So you're going to be asking them to do something they haven't done this year. Are they physically going to be able to hold up if you ask a guy to pitch in 4 straight games on 4 straight days with no off day in between? The Coyotes get their first ever win in Winnipeg over the Jets last night. They had never beaten that team in Winnipeg. Rick Tocchet.
It was nice to get the power play. Those a couple of big goals for us, you know. I thought Pellikula, you know, stuck together there. You know, that's a hell of a power play over there. They had some moments where they had, you know, they're buzzing. But it was a nice win. You know, Kemps was good, really good for us again tonight, and we weathered the storm. You know, that's a hard forechecking team over there.
38 saves for Darcy Kuemper. The Coyotes had lost 10 straight games in Winnipeg since the Jets moved there from Atlanta back in 2011.
This is going to be a dogfight for these next 3 months without Yarmolson. So you got a great performance out of Dvorak. Nick Schmaltz was terrific with 3 points in that game. So you get that win, and then they get Nashville at home next. They're 500. They've been able to bounce back with a couple of good wins after a tough opening 2 losses of the season.
Josh Rosen benched today as the starting quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. The former Cardinal reacts.
I'm bummed out, but it's a part of the process. And, I mean, if Coach wants to make the decision, it's his decision to make. I just got to hopefully make I wish I would have made it a little tougher on him, but it's a long season. I'm going to continue to push fits and be there for him. And likewise, he was there for me.
I know you could say that the odds are stacked against him. He's got 1 touchdown and 5 picks. I don't know what to tell you. This is what you have in front of you. You've got to show them something. And with 1 touchdown and 5 interceptions, I know it was a short sample size. You didn't show them anything. So they're going back to Fitzpatrick. They want to win a game.
And from the Arizona Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury today. Christian Kirk's availability still up in the air with the Giants game looming.
He's got to be 100%. He was moving straight ahead, I thought, really well, and he's progressed, but to be at his best and do what he does on the field, he's got to be able to cut and move, and we don't want to put him out there until he feels 100%, and he's not to that point yet. Until he is, we won't won't have in the game.
So limited in practice today.
Closer than he was last week. That's about all I can give you.
Nice timing.
I thought that
it was like you asked him a question in the press conference. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Talents.
Well planned.
Yeah, really. That was yeah. I mean, the timing of it all was just fantastic.
You would have thought that I was there at that press conference.
You would have thought that you were there in the press conference. Absolutely. Yeah. Was that it?
Speaking of great timing.
I listen, he had a nice pause in there. I thought he was done. So I said Kirk was limited. That ankle injury, they want him to be 100%. I think he'll play this week.
But our top story of the day, Patrick Peterson not only returned to practice today, he made himself available to the media, took lengthy questions, a lot of Q&A. The 6 weeks for him flew by. He simulated games by putting cones out on the field and basically practiced like it was a game, like he was covering a receiver in a game with quarters and everything. He even went up to the campus of Northern Arizona University to practice at elevation.
I went back to my old stomping grounds. I went up to NAU. So I was up in Flagstaff getting a little altitude training. Beat the heat a little bit. It was great to be back up there in Flagstaff and get some great work in that nice cool weather and also in that altitude.
It was weird hearing him describe how he simulated practice. I mean, he put himself through the paces to the point where he said today just felt like a piece of cake.
That's a piece of cake. it was literally it felt like a walkthrough for me because it also, I don't know, because I was so geeked, the anxiety, I don't know what it was. It was like I didn't even practice today. I felt really, really well. I had a great bounce in my step today. I'm just ready to get out there and face some live action. So hopefully I can be the first one to get an interception on this defense.
I'm just curious as to how Dave Zorno and the media up there in Flagstaff, they didn't realize that was Patrick Peterson out there with the cones at NAU.
Well, Flagstaff is.
Where is the median Flagstaff?
I reached out to someone I know in the athletic department, and he's like, what? Patrick Peterson was training at NAU? So I don't know if they're playing their cards close to the vest or if this was some sort of incognito appearance by Patrick Peterson.
How does an 8-time Pro Bowl player show up at NAU, practice with a bunch of cones on a field, and nobody knows he's there?
Well, they have those two fields that they use.
They have three fields across the street from the Sky Dome, plus they have two other fields on the other side of the South Campus.
Where the Cardinals used to train when they were up there for training camp, right? That where we always used to be up there. So you could conceivably go out there in the middle of the morning, and if nobody's using on the field, nobody would know you were there.
But I'm sure somewhere in the parking lot, somebody looked at the vehicle that Patrick Peterson's driving and said, who's here?
Once again, this is Flagstaff, NAU. They don't have their finger really on the pulse of athletics up there unless it's cross-country and mountain biking.
That's strange. All I hear about is just the great journalism program and the amazing reporters that come out of there.
Good question.
Where are they?
Wow. Feel like Sarah's that's just great, cutting right to our livelihood.
Sarah, you're on to something here, Sarah.
Man.
You're on to
something. They're all such great journalists that they're out of Flagstaff and on to bigger and better
exactly.
things.
Exactly. They don't stay in Flagstaff very long.
What about the ones that are being trained in Flagstaff the way you two yahoos were?
Right word right there. They're being trained. They haven't learned yet.
They're inexperienced. They don't know to stand vigil over the practice fields to see if Patrick Peterson's on them or not.
I'd be asking that in my journalism class. Excuse me, teacher. Did you not know that Patrick Peterson was here?
Yeah.
Like, that was a golden opportunity for us. We could have broke that story in the NAU. What's the name of the NAU newspaper?
The Daily Lumberjack.
The Daily Lumberjack. I could have broke that in the Daily Lumberjack. Man.
Well, it happens, I guess, right? Hey, with all your sources, you didn't know he was up there? Let's talk about the experience. Hey,
mud slinging.
You're hundreds of miles away from stories that you break all the time. When has that ever stopped you? When has distance ever stopped the great John Gambadoro from breaking a story? Where were you and your sources on this one?
Did I not?
You're the story breaker around
the information
here.
Information on why Patrick Peterson was upset with the Cardinals.
You did I not have the information that he was training up at NAU? Where is my story breaking co-host when it comes to the local stories that matter?
Don't turn this around on me.
I flipped this like I was on HGTV and I'm one of those house flippers, baby. I bought that house for nothing and I just sold it for a half mil. That's how good I flipped this.
Yeah.
I just turned it right on you. You're the story breaker on the show. Go
basically,
break a story.
NAU journalism is like the Brady Bunch house on HGTV.
Ooh,
okay, that's what it is.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's got nasty. This is fun. Dude, I like this. Yeah, this is good. It's we're
hanging out in Marsh's room.
We're bleeding in here now. We got blood coming out of our pores now. This is awesome. The season started out about as rough as it could have. Now the Washington Nationals are headed to the World Series. Just what kind of a roller coaster season has it been? We'll ask their bench coach, Chip Hale. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Here's the kick now. The pitch, fastball, is hit in the air to left center field. Robles calling for it. He's under and waiting, and he makes the catch! He makes the catch! Bang! Soon go the fireworks! A National League Championship winning Curly W is in the books!
The Washington Nationals, the first team from D.C. since the 30s. To qualify for a World Series, and all you had to do was watch any inning of that series, and you just see former Diamondback after former Diamondback after former Diamondback, and one guy who was in the middle. It seemed like every time they cut to the on-field celebration and everybody was hugging everybody else, there was Chip Hale hugging another guy, and there was Chip Hale, somebody else. You got a lot of FaceTime last night, Chip Hale. Congratulations on going to the World Series, and thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. Yeah, it was something. It was something, and like you said, a lot of ex-D-backs, and you know, just a really, really good group of guys.
No, oh, it is. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for Huddy. You know, you root for people in this industry, and you know, we're rooting for you guys because you know you're such good guys. But tell me about the start, Chip. You guys were 19-31. There was a lot of talk about that Davey could be fired at any day if you guys had another losing streak. What do you remember about the slow start that the Nats got off to?
Well, it was awful, of course, and we heard all those same things that you said. We were on a road trip. We were Philadelphia, Milwaukee to L.A., and we actually sat on a plane in Philly. The plane broke. We went, I think, 3:34 in the morning. We went back to the same hotel in Philly, slept, got up, left at 9 for the game in Milwaukee, flew to Milwaukee, went to a hotel right to the park, got swept in Milwaukee, went to L.A., and we started hearing all the rumors about, you know, possible firings and staff replacement and the whole deal. And we ended up splitting with the Dodgers there in L.A. and played a little better. And then, you know, basically, guys, we just got healthy. That's what happened. I mean, we did make some really good signings with Gerardo Parra, the ex-Diamondback, of course, and then Asdrubal Cabrera came aboard after August 1st. But it was just health. I mean, we looked back. It was funny. Once we clinched, we had a little bit of time before the playoffs started, and we looked back at our lineup in that Milwaukee series. There was no Soto. There was no Rendon. No Turner. I mean, we were running out there most of our AAA team. So that's what this game's about. I mean, if you look at any club and you take people away, I think that was probably the amazing thing about the Yankees this year. If you look at them, they really played well, even with all the injuries they had. We couldn't survive it at that point. And then once those guys came back, the pitching started to get in line, the starting pitching at least, and we did it somehow. Our bullpen was, a 5-5 for the season, and that just doesn't cut it. And somehow, some way, we were able to claw our way back, and it's funny because the bullpen has really done well in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, because you haven't used it very much. You're only using Doolittle and Hudson. But tell me, you know, did you have any influence when Huddy came over from Toronto with Gerardo? You know these guys. You manage these guys. Did you have any influence? Did they ask you about these players before they got them?
Well, we talked a lot about Parra, because once we were playing the Giants, and one of the coaches from the Giants might have been Ron Wotus or maybe Curt Young. Rick Shue, one of those guys, of course, all ex-guys I've coached with, said, hey, you know, we're probably going to end up releasing this guy, and I know his numbers aren't great now, but he's still got a lot left in him. And I said, well, heck, if we can get him, he could light a fire into some of our younger kids. So, that one, the Huddy one was just – I know at the deadline, and it was different this year with the one deadline, we were trying to get anybody we could get out of the bullpen. And when Riz was able to get Huddy, who was really having a nice year in Toronto, it was a last-second thing. So there was no asking anything. I was just happy to see we got him.
Chip Hale, bench coach of the Washington Nationals, former manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show on the day after the Washington Nationals clinch trip to the World Series. What time did you go to bed this morning, Chip?
Well, I actually got to bed. We got to bed at 2. My daughter had flown from TCU here to see a couple games in D.C., and she stayed an extra day. So we were able to get to bed, and then I took her to the airport at 4 so she could make her classes today. I know that there was guys still up at 4 because when I was driving to the airport, there was still the coach's chain, text chain was still going on, and our advance scout was actually at the airport going to the Yankee Stadium. And the guys were texting him back, so they were still up with a bunch of guys. So it went deep into the night, but at 54, it's tough for me to do that.
Oh, come on, Chip, you're stronger than you think. What is that for that community, that city? Considering, and I know you weren't there for all of it, but all the times that they had made the postseason in the last 5 or 6 years, only to lose in Game 5. I think it happened like a stretch of 4 or 5 years. It had been frustrating. What sort of sense of release did you pick up on around the city or among that fan base with what happened last night?
Well, each one of the victories, first obviously getting in because of the 1931 start, was huge relief. The wild card win against the Brewers was so was unbelievable, with Soto hitting the ball and the ball taking the funky hop and getting by the guy and everybody scoring. And you could see an ownership's face. They would come down every day after that, and you could see, like, the expecting, well, okay, here we go to Game 5 with the Dodgers. Here we go again. And we're like, we're gonna do it, you know. And we're all thinking, hey, we're going to L.A. We got a shot, but it's going to be tough. But we had the big boy on the mound. Maybe we can do this thing. But you could see there was that little bit of like, okay, here it goes again. And every time we win one of these games, there's a huge release. And the community, the fans have been unbelievable.
Chip, what was it like? You guys went in a different direction. You let Harper go. You decided to go for pitching instead with Patrick Corbin. What was it like letting Harper go? Do you think in some ways that maybe the team was better off going that direction?
Well, I don't know if we were all better off. And Harp was a good kid. It's just money. I mean, they wanted to be under the competitive balance, the mark you have to hit, and it wasn't going to work. It just wasn't going to work. They offered him a decent deal, but he got more. And every player, worth what they're worth. And I'm happy for him. He had a good year in Philly. He hurt us a bunch of times. So I don't know if we were better off for it. Guys rallied around a little bit, I think, saying, hey, we can do this without Harp. And Patrick was huge all year for us. He stayed healthy. He pitched well for us. I mean, in the playoffs so far, he's pitched out of the pen. He started. He's done a lot of different things. So, like I said, I mean, I don't ever like to pin it on one guy, like, hey, just because we got rid of this guy, we're better. But the guys, I think do feel like they want to prove baseball wrong, saying, well, you can't win without him.
Yeah. Chip, we appreciate the time. Congratulations again, and thanks for joining us on short notice, and best of luck in the World Series. We mean that.
Well, guys, thank you so much. I miss you guys.
All right, Chip, miss you too. Good luck out there.
Chip Hale joining us. Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. ASU football, they're at the halfway point of their season, and through those first 6 games, one player is breaking through and breaking out more than any other. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
Blitz the Bayou. Text Blitz to 620-620.
Time for Blitz the Bayou. Gloria Hernandez. G-L-O-R-I-A. Gloria.
Remember that song? Gloria.
Gloria. The St. Louis one, yeah.
I think I got your number.
Gloria Hernandez. Do you have our number? Hey. 602-260-9870. 602-260-9870. If your name is Gloria Hernandez, you are our winner. You're in Mesa, and you have 10 minutes to call us. 602 260-9870 to get qualified for the grand prize trip to New Orleans for Blitz the Bayou. Did I hear you say earlier you don't really understand why they took Gambo and turned it into gumbo?
Yes.
That's such an obvious play on words. Gambo, gumbo, right? You know, gumbo, the seafood stew that is famous down there? No?
Just, yeah.
It should have been beignets and gumbo. I don't know why you didn't play off your name.
Yeah, really. Yes. Gloria Hernandez from Mesa. 10 minutes, 602-260.
I think they got your number.
9870. Let's get an update.
Laura Brannigan? Was that Laura Brannigan?
That was Laura Brannigan, as a matter of fact.
Laura Brannigan.
Get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
We just had Chip Hale on the show, bench coach of the Washington Nationals, a former member of the Diamondback who's now going to the World Series.
Yes, a whole lot of ties between the Diamondbacks and the Nationals. Yeah, so our poll question for today, which former D-back are you happiest for as the Nats move on to the World Series? Chip Hale is not one of those options. We just went with players here because there were too many options. So which of these four were you happiest for? Daniel Hudson, Patrick Corbin, Max Scherzer, or Gerardo Parra?
Daniel Hudson.
I went with Huddy, too, who will be on the show tomorrow.
He will be on the show tomorrow.
Just texted me now. He's going to come on the show tomorrow.
Crying baby in the background.
Maybe. Crying baby in the background, maybe, but yeah. Huddy will be on tomorrow.
Well, you know what? He has our lead right now.
He's got the lead. He was tied earlier.
It was tied earlier at 36% between Huddy and Corbin. But Hudson is taking the lead, 38% for him, 32% for Pat Corbin, 15% for Parra, yeah, and 14% for Scherzer. So two close races.
You can vote on that on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page.
Yes,
at
please.
Burns and Gambo is where you can find that.
Second down and 10. They fake it to Benjamin, throw the quick slant. Ayuk has it, and Ayuk breaks free to the 40. It's a foot race to the 50, 40, 30. Ayuk to the 20, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Devils! An 86-yard catch and run for Brandon Ayuk.
A lot of websites are doing mid-season reviews of ASU football, and what a season it's been so far. Them ranked 17th in the country, 5-1 on the season. Players who have stood out, numbers that have stood out, guys who need to get better, things like that. Look, if we're being honest about this, Jaden Daniels is the breakout player for ASU. He's a true freshman quarterback who's put up numbers that we weren't expecting out of a true freshman. Brandon Ayuk doesn't happen unless Jaden Daniels happens, right? Jaden Daniels has to happen,
of course,
first in order for Ayuk to have any success.
How many times have you seen a young quarterback come in and not be able to get to the ball to the number one receiver? Young quarterback who's in high school 6 months ago going to the prom, you know?
All the time.
Right.
But in that context, Brandon Ayuk has been an incredible emergence this year for ASU football.
He is. I mean, rising fast in NFL circles, too, since he was a JC guy. I mean, last year he came in, and he obviously was behind N'Keal Harry. But he did. He had some good numbers. He scored 3 touchdowns. But this year, he's already got more yards and touchdowns this year than he did all of last year. He's behind receptions-wise by like 2. I think he had 33 last year. He has 31 this year. But he has been a breakout player. And he is, like, if I'm Utah's defensive coordinator, I mean, I'm worried about Brandon Ayuk. How do I stop this guy? Because he can beat you in so many different ways. He's not a big kid. He's not as big as Jalen Strong. He's not as big as N'Keal Harry. He's a 6'1 guy, but he's fast and he's got great hands. And he's just a really, really good football player. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, I love watching him play. He's established himself as the number one receiver on this team. And there's good receivers, too. I mean, they've got a lot of good wide receivers. But he is clearly, him and Eno Benjamin are just on a different level as far as contributors to that offense, along with Jaden Daniels.
He's already had 3 games of over 120 yards receiving so far this year. You hear his offensive coordinator, Rob Likens, talk about it. And he mentions, look, Ayuk is just scratching the surface of what he could do.
He'll get a shot to play in the NFL, there's no question. And when he's just now reaching and starting, you know, scratching the surface of his potential. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll see where and how. A lot of things need to happen between now and the draft in April, including a season that is a lot better than I think a lot of people anticipated. But Ayuk is a huge part of an offense in a way that we didn't expect the offense to be successful this year. I mean, I think we thought they could be successful focused around, you know, Benjamin.
Well, we knew that Jaden was a dual threat guy, right? So you probably thought that, you know, his running would be more impressive than his throwing, but it hasn't been that way. Jaden Daniels has come in here and been just a dynamic player on both. I mean, he could run the football, but his passing is fantastic. Rough start the first couple games, right? But again, he's like Kyler Murray. He's getting better week by week by week. He's getting some experience. The kid's fantastic. But I do, you know, Eno Benjamin is a great running back, and Brandon Ayuk's a great wide receiver, and then Jaden is a blossoming young quarterback. I mean, this offense has the ability. Did we think that they can go punch for punch with Washington State? They proved that they could.
Yes.
You know, they proved that they could.
And they had
game.
To. They lose that game otherwise. Yeah, they lose that game otherwise. Gloria Hernandez, she has not called yet? No. Okay, Gloria. Gloria Hernandez, you've got just a few minutes left, so please.
On the run now.
You are our Blitz the Bayou finalist today. You have 10 minutes, actually less than that now, to call us at 602-260-9870. We're waiting on Gloria Hernandez from Mesa. 602-260-9870. Rob Likens, the offense right now is in a good place.
I think we're in a good spot, especially with the offensive line being together. We still have our deficiencies, and we know what those deficiencies are so that we can plan ahead for them. So that has made it a little bit easier on us, and it helps us with our game plan as you kind of know what to do now.
Boy, if you're talking about surprises, and Doug Howler did a nice story on The Athletic, kind of a midseason report card for ASU. Best surprise so far for ASU football? Two true freshman starters
offensive
on the offensive line. It just
they survived, didn't they?
Not supposed to be like that.
I wouldn't even say they survived. I mean, I think that they've played well. Like, the offensive line has played well.
I think Ladarius Henderson has survived. He's done okay. I think West at right guard has been very, very good. He's been very good. Where it was a little choppy at first for Ladarius Henderson at left tackle. I think he settled down and settled in a little bit. But they've done more than survive with that. They've done all right, considering you've got two true freshmen along an offensive line. That's, to have the success they're having offensively is a surprise, given that, because I thought that was going to be a real problem for them at the start of the year.
Yeah, well, in his article, he mentions how West was prepared physically. He was just a very physical player. So that helped a lot. And then, you know, moving Cole back to center and just what they did. I mean, they were able to put these guys in places where they were able to succeed. So, and this offensive line is getting better, too. So it's been a really good improvement week per week, the offensive line. Because, look, Ayuk, Eno, Jaden, I mean, if this offensive line is trash, if it's not doing well, the success they're having offensively with these three guys, that doesn't happen.
We've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast, it works just like every other podcast in the world. It's brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer, meaning you can listen to it whenever you want, wherever you want, completely on your schedule. They both are rookies who were selected in the top 10 of the NFL draft. You know what? She did not call. You're right. Thank you for reminding me.
Gloria.
No, Gloria.
You didn't have a number.
Gloria did not call.
You forgot to call us. Now somebody else can win. Gloria.
Caller number 10 at 602-260-9870. Our streak just came to an end because of Gloria. She did not call
Gloria.
Us.
Gloria.
602.
Our streak just came to an end.
260-9870.
It's all because of you.
Caller number 10 Gloria. Is registered to Blitz the Bayou and go see a football game with the Cards in New Orleans. They both are rookies who were selected in the top 10 of the NFL draft. Even if they could, would the Cardinals and the Giants change anything about what they did on that draft day back in April? We'll talk about that coming up right here on the Burns and Gambo Show. This will be the 9th time. The ninth time rookie quarterbacks selected in the top 10 are playing each other in a football game this weekend when Kyler Murray takes on Daniel Jones. And then look at the list. Now, you say
I love this. I do. I love this.
You say something like that. I say something like that. And it just sounds so big, right? It's like, oh, wow, that's a big deal.
Right.
Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones. Oh, my
gosh. Matchup of top 10.
Top 10 matchups.
Quarterback selected in the top 10.
Surely this must be historical and have giant implications.
Look at this list.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good.
None of the, listen, this is amazing. From 1971 until now, none of the matchups were any good. None of them. Like, no. They were not, like, there was no marquee matchups in the years that you've had two quarterbacks selected in the top 10. I'll let you go over each one, and we'll go over them.
Okay, the one way back, 3 months after, 6 months after I was born. 1971, New England's Jim Plunkett versus Houston's Dan Passerini.
You know, Plunkett was a really good quarterback. He won Super Bowls. Pastorini was okay. He wasn't bad. He played for a while. That was decent, but it wasn't great.
Okay, now we're getting into the ones I remember. Oh, 1993, okay. Drew Bledsoe from New England, Rick Meyer from Seattle.
Rick Meyer sucked. He was a disaster. He was a bust as the number two overall pick. Total bust.
And that was one of three matchups within this list that feature number one versus number two. Okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Bledsoe versus Meyer. That's one versus two. Here's the second one. 1998, Manning versus Leaf. October 4th, 1998, Peyton Manning versus Ryan Leaf.
The only thing Ryan Leaf is known for in his NFL career is that sound by, get out of my face! Remember that?
Yeah, he's cleaned up his life quite well.
Right, but his NFL
but his
career,
NFL
the only
career,
thing you remember is the soundbite of him yelling at some reporter. He was a terrible quarterback.
That was number one versus number two. Tim Couch versus Akili Smith.
Oh, they were both so bad.
Which remarkably was number one versus number three back in 1999.
What busts.
Yeah.
I mean, what busts the both of them.
Although
are.
Bruce Arians will swear to this day that Tim Couch, if they just stuck with him, could have been better. 2011, Cam Newton versus Blaine Gabbert.
Good career.
1 versus 10.
Yeah, good career for Cam. Terrible career for Blaine Gabbert.
2012, Andrew Luck versus Ryan Tannehill.
Now, this is nothing special. I mean, Luck was a fantastic quarterback. Cut his career short. Tannehill was the backup, and now he's starting in Tennessee, but he was just average in Miami. He was okay.
That's 1 versus 8 in that matchup.
That's at least a matchup where both guys didn't suck, because every other one I could say there was a guy that's been terrible.
2015, Jameis Winston number 1 versus Mariota number 2.
Yeah, Mariota's a backup now, and Winston's going to be joining him real soon, just 4 years after they were drafted. Those guys were no good.
Last year, Sam Darnold versus Josh Allen, number 3 versus number 7.
Time will tell. We don't know yet. We don't know. Time will tell.
Finally, Kyler Murray, number 1, versus Daniel Jones, number 6.
The good news is this one has the chance to be the best of them all, because the other ones weren't any good. I mean, there were just no good matchups in these when quarterbacks faced each other, and they were both top 10 picks. Murray against Daniel Jones, we'll see. The chance of this being a good rivalry, slim. I mean, they're not in the same division. At least when you add Akili Smith against Tim Couch, they were in the same division, and they were going to play each other twice every year. Darnold and Josh Allen, they're in the same division. They're going to play each other twice every year. Murray and Daniel Jones will play each other, once every 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
So I don't know that this has a chance to be special, but both teams are looking at these quarterbacks right now as being franchise guys.
Stat-wise, in almost every comparison, in every number, Murray has been better statistically than Daniel Jones. He's had more opportunities. He's had better weapons around him. Daniel Jones has not played one game this year, has not taken one snap this year, where all four of his top weapons were available to him at the same time.
Right.
Evan Engram, Saquon Barkley, Sterling Shepard, and Golden Tate. Not one game where all four of those guys were available to him. And yet, they're so enamored with Daniel Jones in New York, and we've seen such flashes out of him that the writer who covers the Giants for The Athletic in New York wrote this morning, quote, "I doubt either team would trade for the other quarterback. In fact, after seeing how enamored the Giants have been with Jones, I wonder if they would have taken him number one overall."
They weren't. We knew they weren't interested in Murray earlier. They didn't, you know, I think Gettleman kind of hinted that he wasn't interested in Murray.
Type of quarterback doesn't seem to fit their profile for how they want their quarterbacks to be. They've always been big, tall, strong arm, pocket pass guy. And Gettleman basically said as much, I think, during the scouting combine. I think you're right, where he just sort of intimated that that's just not the type of style that they're in. Now, would they have taken Daniel Jones number one?
I mean, might have. If they took him at 6, they might have taken him at 1.
I mean, can you imagine the shockwaves that would have sent through New York if they took Daniel Jones?
What the hell's the difference?
Overall?
If that's the guy you want, then that's the guy you want.
Well, I know, but on draft day, they just got raked over the coals for taking Daniel Jones 6.
Right, and all those people that raked him over the coals look like idiots now, because Jones looks like he's pretty good, right? He looks better than. Who would you rather have right now, Daniel Jones or Dwayne Haskins? It's not even close.
No.
It's not even close.
No, it's not. So it'll be, and of course, this will be, and I hate to say this, but because they're playing a team that gets the attention that the Giants do, this will be an opportunity, not that he cares about this, for Kyler Murray to kind of shut up some of those national voices who keep talking about Daniel Jones as being better than him.
That's a really good point. We haven't discussed that yet because he's on the national. Hey, listen, finally, those guys at First Take that watch all the Giants games are going to be able to see Kyler Murray.
I guarantee you they will.
Hey, for the first time this year,
Max Kellerman gets to watch a Kyler Murray game.
Max Kellerman is going to be able to watch a game. He's going to be able to watch a real Kyler Murray game instead of just watching three highlights and pretending he knows something about the guy.
They're going to be shocked when they see Murray throw the ball more than five times in the game.
Well, that guy could throw the ball in the pocket. I didn't know that. I just thought all he did was run.
I thought he carried the ball 32 times a game. I didn't realize he could throw
the
ball.
Who was the other joke on that show? Marcus Spears. Yeah. I mean, that guy, I don't even think that guy not only didn't watch a game that Kyler Murray's playing, he didn't even watch a highlight.
No.
And he was chomping at the bit to jump all over Kyler Murray.
When you respond to these, well, you don't respond to them. You call them out on Twitter. Do they respond to you?
Sometimes they do.
Do they really?
Okay. I mean, sometimes they do. I'm
just curious.
I'm not shy about calling people out.
Unsolicited, you couldn't wait to get the Twitter handles of these three people so you could just start calling them out on your Twitter account yesterday. Did they respond to you? Did Marcus Spears?
Okay, let me see.
Max Kellerman?
I mean, I did not look. I haven't been on Twitter much today. I did
tweet them again if they haven't responded.
Oh, look at you.
We could tweet him again?
Yeah.
Stirring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Just like to stir up the pot a little bit.
Sarah's waking up those sleeping dogs. She will not let them lie. She will not do it.
Hey, Max, have you asked Daniel Jones to prom yet? Honestly, that's how I feel when I listen to
him. That is what I said. No chance they watched a game. If they had, you would not have heard them talk about Murray the way they did. But hey, if you could fool 95% of your audience into thinking you have a clue, then they will live with the 5% of us who are like, what you talking about, Willis? I broke out of what you talking about, Willis.
You went different strokes, huh?
I went different
strokes.
You went
a different strokes reference. Yeah. And no response?
No response.
They didn't take the different strokes bait?
No, they didn't.
Yeah, that's shocking.
Because they're like, how am I going to argue with a guy that actually watches Kyler Murray play?
That's shocking they didn't take the bait for that. That's such an alluring, you know, low-hanging fruit right there.
What you talking about, Willis?
I think we should try again. I think you should try again.
I say that to Mike Kitty. He looks at me with his blank stare. I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you really expect your 10-year-old son to understand your different strokes reference from a 1970s sitcom?
I mean, is he watching the Brady Bunch
question. Do you expect him to understand that?
No, but he loves the Brady Bunch.
Really?
I swear to God, last night he was like, after the Nationals game was over, can we watch an episode of the Brady Bunch? I'm like, all right. It was the one in which Marsha dated a guy from a rival school, and he was trying to steal the playbook from Greg.
Wild.
Because Greg was a halfback, and the other guy was a quarterback, and then Marsha realized that he stole the playbook. But Greg gave him a fake playbook, and he stole the fake playbook.
Calling a timeout. I need a 20 here again for the second time. He's just doing that because he doesn't want to go to bed. He didn't want to watch Brady Bunch. He doesn't want to go to bed. That's all. It's either Brady Bunch or I have to go to bed. Can I watch Brady Bunch?
I put on Gilligan's Island, and Chelsea was like, no. No, it's not happening.
Join Kevin.
Let him see the opening, the 3-hour tour. She's like, no, I'm putting my foot down. You are not going to get him hooked on Gilligan's Island. You're done. She told me that last night. I'm done.
Keep putting those feet down, Chelsea. We appreciate it.
Put her foot down.
Join Kevin McCabe, AZ Preps Live this Saturday from 9 to 11 a.m. Chick-fil-A off of Tatum and Cactus in Phoenix. You're going to have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, tickets and other prizes. Visit the events page at ArizonaSports.com for details on a Chick-fil-A high school football roadshow series. The Cardinals have won two games in a row. Looking ahead to the rest of the schedule, how many more are out there? We counted. We came up with some numbers, and you might want to hear them next on the Burns and Gambo Show.